You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 21st, 2016.
West Side is kind of blossoming, and then here's this kind of weed in the middle of the garden that doesn't make any sense.
Residents of the Maple Heights neighborhood are concerned about the effects of a new electrical substation proposed by Duke Energy. We'll bring you that story later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
7 years after it was first proposed, the Monroe County Solid Waste Management District may be taking another stab at what's been known simply as the MRF project. In a meeting last week, the board discussed spending as much as $100,000 for consulting work related to the MRF, or Materials Recovery Facility. Once completed, the facility would process the county's recyclables, which could then be sold on the open market. The district's executive director, Tom McGlasson, said officials want to make some major changes to previous plans for the MRF.
This is something we've been revisiting over the past couple of months with the executive committee. You know, this is some things that were determined out of it, that the facility that was proposed at the landfill just did not have a large enough footprint, enough square footage to really allow us to do the volume of material that would be necessary to make a financially feasible facility. And one of the big hitches in that is that there's not room in there to do material sorting. And if we were to look at accepting material from other entities, we did not find other entities that do the source separation that we do at our facilities. So thus, whatever they brought to us would require additional sorting on site. And there just was not room in the facility to put a sorting line in.
McGlasson discussed the MRF during a presentation about the district's budget for next year. The MRF project has been one of the longest debated and most contentious local government projects Monroe County has seen in decades. The district's board of directors have argued over the viability of the project for years, with County Commissioners Iris Kiesling and Patrick Stofers as the primary opposition. Council member Steve Volan, who's also a volunteer here at WFHB, has been one of the strongest proponents of the project, along with the former director of the district, Larry Barker. Barker resigned from his job last year. Proponents have presented figures indicating the district would save money by selling recyclables rather than paying for the company Republic Services to haul those recyclables away. Volan has also raised questions about whether, in fact, Republic Services actually recycles all of the materials they haul away, or whether some actually end up in the landfill. Opponents like Kiesling have said there could be unexpected costs for a MRF. The Solid Waste Management District actually budgeted for the opening of a MRF last year, and they even managed to purchase a building, but the facility was never opened. During his budget presentation last week, Executive Director McGlasson said the board's executive committee still wants to open a facility, one that would process pre-sorted recyclables as well as unsorted garbage.
They came up with the following recommendations, which would be to proceed with a dual-stream MRF in two phases at another location yet to be determined. A dual-stream MRF would include both the clean stream or the source-separated material from our sites, as well as a waste stream side where recyclables would actually be recaptured from the waste stream being thrown out by residents and businesses. it would need to be done in a dual stream. The I see at the bottom there, materials recovered from a waste stream MRF have a much lower market value than our source separated material does, and in order to maximize the value and thus the revenue from the source separated material, those streams would need to be kept separate from each other in the processing facility.
McGlasson presented a draft of a budget that includes $100,000 for consulting work related to the MRF that would cover an engineering study, a business plan, and identification of a site for the facility.
A recent release of the Nursing Policy Report predicted a shortage of nurses in Indiana 2 years from now in the fields of geriatric, mental health, and primary care, as well as care coordination. By the year 2025, the state is expected to be over 250,000 nurses short in these areas. According to Dr. Robin Newhouse, the dean of Indiana University's School of Nursing, this shortage is due to increased demand in these specialized fields rather than a lack of nurses.
Over time, the number of nurses has increased. So now in the nation, we have about 2.8, 2.9 million registered nurses, and that's absolutely wonderful. And that's certainly been driven by increased need, increased recognition of the types of care that nurses can provide, and also an expansion. For example, when we think in the state, the Healthy Indiana Plan, HIP 2.0, increased the number of Hoosiers that are covered by health insurance. And the Pew Research Center had estimated that every day 10,000 baby boomers turn 65. So there's more demand for nurses overall.
Newhouse says the school plans to combat this shortage in a number of ways, including an increase in the number of students in their program. The IUPUI nursing program currently has more than 800 students in their baccalaureate program, with plans to increase in the next few years. The school also aims to increase the number of students enrolled in their mental health and adult care graduate programs in that time. However, one difficulty preventing increased enrollment is the number of faculty employed at the school.
Expanding the enrollment in any program requires additional faculty. Additional faculty require additional budget, so it becomes a little more difficult to increase enrollment.
Newhouse says the low number of faculty is due to three main factors. Currently, faculty is aging and nearing retirement. Practicing nurses often have higher salaries than academics, and finding staff with the proper qualifications, in some cases including doctoral degrees, is difficult. In order to increase enrollment and combat the predicted shortage, IUPUI must first find more faculty. According to Newhouse, the school is trying a variety of methods to make that happen.
We are recruiting in areas where we'd like to increase the enrollment within our programs. We are working with possible candidates that may be coming into the academic arena, and we're also looking at innovative models in partnership with some of our practice partners.
According to Newhouse, approximately 7% of Indiana's nurses focus in geriatric care. Only 4% focus in mental health.
For a city its size, 84,000 people, Bloomington is relatively safe. That's the conclusion of a report by Wish TV this week. According to the FBI and the Department of Justice, the crime rate in other Indiana cities of similar size is 46.7 crimes per 1,000 residents. In Bloomington, that number is just 33.2. The Bureau of Justice Statistics and Department of Justice recommend an average ratio of 2.5 police officers per 1,000 people. At full staff in Bloomington, police number just 100 and would have to double the size of their staff to meet that 2.5 average. Bloomington Police Captain Steve Kellums attributes the department's success with fewer officers to things like community policing, training, and recruitment. In the report, Kellums tells Wish TV, quote, "People love Bloomington. It seems like a small, quiet town. The reality is it's a big city and has big city problems," unquote.
Indiana's Attorney General Greg Zoeller is urging consumers to do research before donating time and support to help victims of the mass shooting in Orlando. In a recent statement, Zoeller suggests ways to be sure charity goes for its intended purpose. First, determine if the charity is legitimate by checking with irs.gov/charities, where eligible organizations are listed. Be guarded about solicitations. Donate only to legitimate causes where monies are received by a third party, like a bank. And don't donate by wire or a prepaid debit card. Instead, contribute by credit card or check payable to the charitable organization, not to a solicitor. And be aware that by Indiana law, contributors have the right to cancel a pledge for monetary contributions at any time prior to making a contribution. For more information, click on Charities and Donors at IndianaConsumer.com. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. A plan for a new electrical substation near City Hall is drawing the ire of local residents who say the proposed design will be a blight on the Maple Heights neighborhood and the new trades district. Correspondent Jared Dill brings us that story.
Tomorrow evening, the Bloomington City Council will be holding its first meeting to discuss a proposal from Duke Energy to install a new electrical substation. Planned for a piece of mostly vacant land near the intersection of 11th Street and Rogers Street, the substation will displace two existing businesses. Duke says the substation is necessary to continue supplying electricity to the growing downtown area, as well as laying the groundwork for the proposed Trades District development, which is intended to host tech firms that are likely to consume large amounts of electrical power. Duke spokesperson Lou Middleton lays out the case for the new substation.
The downtown area of Bloomington, including parts of the IU campus, have really been growing in the past several years. That kind of growth translates into a higher demand for electricity. And right now, the substations that we have in place are just about at their maximum capacity to deliver reliable energy to our customers. So what we need to do is to install another substation to help balance the load better among all those substations so that we don't run the risk of outages, unplanned outages, or not being able to serve our customers. So it's because of the need that we build the substation. Now, concerning the location or the proposed location of the substation, the best thing to do from an engineering standpoint is to locate the substation as close as you can to where the load is. And in this case, the growth in the demand for electricity has been in that downtown area. So, we need to locate it as closely to there as we possibly can.
Residents of the Maple Heights neighborhood, which borders the train tracks running alongside the proposed site, want Duke to move the substation out of their neighborhood or switch to an alternate design. Chris Sturbaum, the city councilman whose district includes the proposed site, thinks the substation will be a blight on the continuing development of Bloomington's near west side.
Well, just that all the positive notes of development that have been happening over there, the Beeline Trail, City Hall, the resurgent Maple Heights neighborhood, west side is kind of blossoming, and then here's this kind of weed in the middle of the garden that doesn't make any sense.
Duke says the proposed design already has screening, including berms and trees. Duke's website for the new substation includes digital renderings that simulate the view from the street, and they make the substation look almost invisible. Earthen berms topped by trees hide most of the substation from pedestrian and auto traffic, and a tree line separates it from the Maple Heights neighborhood, along with a set of train tracks. Duke says this screening is both effective and cheap.
We have proposed in our initial proposal a screening plan that we believe meets the criteria of providing adequate screening from the neighborhood, while at the same time being probably the most cost-effective screening plan that we can come up with.
Chris Sturbaum is extremely skeptical of Duke's claim that the substation will be adequately hidden.
Leaves fall off trees. Trees on drawings are 30 years old, and they get planted when they're 5 years old. So you totally see this thing. It's and you, of course, not to mention the 50-foot tall power lines that come in, which there's nothing we can do about that. But to the pedestrian on the street, there's this, I've said this before, but that site is, if you, this was a little Greek town, that would be where the temple would be. It's the top of the hill. It's the highest point, and it's got a substation on it.
Sturbaum and the Maple Heights Neighborhood Association have proposed the idea of asking Duke to switch to an alternative substation design that would blend in more with upcoming developments for the area, including the Trades District. Behind the trees and the berms, the current proposed design looks a lot like any other substation in Bloomington, a chain-link fence surrounding a bunch of electrical equipment. The residents want to see the substation enclosed by a wall or a building facade instead of a fence. This practice is common in denser cities, which often hide public infrastructure inside fake buildings designed to blend in with the surrounding architecture. Sturbaum cited the example of a substation in Traverse City, Michigan. When viewed from the street, that substation appears to be a small retail space attached to a large warehouse-like building. But the roof of the building is open to the sky, and inside it is the familiar equipment of a substation.
I was at the New Urban Conference, and I mentioned that this was one of the problems of new urbanism and new growth. And this guy from Traverse City said, hey, we built a substation right downtown. We built a brick wall around it that looks like a building, and it's open on the top so it breathes. And we put a donut shop, a building that now has a great donut shop right in front of it. And the citizens don't even know there's a substation there, but they do know there's a donut shop there. So it's completely appropriate. And we're saying to Duke, let's do a win-win situation here. Let's talk to the community and let's build something that will contribute to the Trades District, not detract from it.
When asked about alternative screening plans, Duke spokesperson Lou Middleton reiterated that the current plan met their requirements and was the most cost-effective. He also made the argument that increases in costs, such as more expensive substation designs, would eventually be passed on to Duke's customers. The city council may not be able to do anything to stop Duke from building the substation. Duke is regulated at the state level, and state law says Duke can effectively ignore local zoning laws. This means Duke doesn't have to get approval from the Plan Commission. However, the City Council does need to grant a vacancy for Duke to use two sections of street and two alleyways. If the City Council refuses, Duke could go to court and claim eminent domain. As a public utility, Duke would be likely to win that case. Duke has used eminent domain power recently in larger projects to construct transmission lines elsewhere in the state of Indiana. Chris Sturbaum says the vacancy request is an opportunity to pressure Duke into changing their plan into something more palatable for residents.
The state legislature has made it so that we don't zone them. They're like IU. They just come in and they can build what they want without going through a plan commission. What we would try to establish would be an agreement, a conditional agreement in the vacation, whereby we discuss and they make allowances for design. And that's something to be worked out because, you know, what's interesting is this is the first new urban substation that we've had to deal with in my lifetime.
The City Council will be holding their first discussion of the substation plan at a meeting Wednesday night. Residents who are interested in meeting with activists before the City Council meeting can visit substationsolutions.info for details. The actual vote on the vacancy proposal is tentatively scheduled for next Wednesday, June 29th. For WFHB News, I'm Jared Dill.
The City Council meets tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. at City Hall.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Welcome again to the Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Ryan Stacey with the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. And this week we are going to say a few words to this year's crop of college graduates. The first words I want to say to all of you are congratulations. The other words I want to say to you, though, are be careful. Today's recent graduates are facing a situation maybe no other generation of college-educated Americans have faced before. An oversaturated job market, which puts downward pressure on salaries and benefits, not to mention those huge debt loads. It's estimated that the average grad leaves college with over $30,000 in student loans to pay off. So there's absolutely no better time to get smart about your money than right now. It's not all bad news, though. You and your classmates are definitely up against some real challenges as you take on the world, but you're actually in a unique position to do yourself some big financial favors in certain ways. Here are a few pointers on taking advantage of and avoiding some pitfalls of your early post-grad life. First off, for better or for worse, it's time for a reality check. I hate to be the one to break it to you, grad, but your relationship to money is about to change, possibly dramatically. It might have been manageable to stay afloat, even if it was tough sometimes, on the part-time jobs you held as a student, maybe the kindness of family and friends, but your spending in your new life might become less about where the party is on Friday and more about keeping the lights on. That's okay. Lights and hot water are good, and a healthy approach to spending does allow for spending some of it on fun, but it's crucial that you prepare for a new way of thinking about money. A great way to do that is to start with exactly where you are right now financially. It was easy to lose track of how big that student loan debt was getting and how small your savings were in the blur of college life, so now is a great time to sit down, look at how much you owe to whom, and how much you have coming in income. Looking at those numbers, especially if you don't have a good job lined up right after graduating, can really put things in perspective. Next, look for ways you can keep your spending low, and especially where you can cut back. A great way to get a snapshot of your spending is to keep a receipt for every penny you spend for the next month or two, then take a look at where your money went. You might be surprised how quickly you can identify some purchases that don't seem so important on second look. One particular thing you might be spending more on than you need to is food. Especially food from restaurants. Learn to cook and make a great cup of coffee at home, and you could save yourself more than you realize. It's healthier too. The point is, every little bit you can keep in your bank account is a little bit you can save, which is what you should try to do a lot of during the grace period of 6 months or so that many student loan providers give you before it's repayment time. It will come in very handy if times get tougher. And speaking of loans, the only thing worse than those low-interest student loans hanging over your head would be high-interest debt like credit cards, right? Avoiding debt should be a top priority for your whole life, but especially for the next few years. So do yourself a favor. When you do land a job, don't go overboard with rewarding yourself. Live within your means, even if it means driving an older car and having a roommate or two. One advantage you do have right now is that you've just lived like a college student for a few years. You know how to make a meal from ramen and whatever, where the bargains are, and you probably have friends in the same boat as you. Stick it out a little while longer. The reward will be bigger, I promise. The last thing I'd like you to think about is something that won't happen for 1,000 years. Okay, it just feels like 1,000 years from now, but I promise you'll thank yourself if you plan for it now. I'm talking about retirement. Yes, already. Because of the way interest and taxation on your retirement savings work, you'll retire with a much bigger nest egg, up to 2 to 3 times bigger, if you start saving in your 20s rather than in your 30s and 40s. Even if it's a few dollars a week, try to put something away for your retirement years and take advantage of all the plans an employer might offer you. Passing those up is like passing up a raise. Now, I hope you aren't taking my advice the wrong way, grad. I'm sure the last thing you want is one more lecture, and I know I don't have to tell you that money's tight these days. I truly wish the best for you. What I'm doing is just encouraging you to use your money smarts to make the best plan you can for yourself, to invest in your future self the best way you can. So I'll leave that to you with two final words as you venture out on your own path in life. Good luck.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producer is Joe Crawford, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library, .info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Taylor Haggerty, along with myself, for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jared Dill.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsey. It's part of the It's Your Money project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Jennifer Brooks. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.